Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 21 of Slam Fire Radio for September 5th, 2013. I am Matthew, the Warning Shot McClatchy, and joining me is...
Owen.
You're supposed to be a bit more exuberant. Owen, the prepping warrior Flewelling.
Right. No, just Owen this week.
Just Owen. And Trevor, how are you doing, Trevor?
Cricket.
No, Trevor. Oh.
We're still a little bit Trevor-free for a little bit longer.
For 20 more minutes. So instead, we got Toby. Toby, how's it going?
Howdy, gents. How are you?
Good. It's Toby
now
Lee.
That is an upgrade right there.
Oh, you know Trevor's going to listen to this later, right? Of course, he won't know that we made fun of him until it's after it's too late.
Exactly.
So this is the deal. Trevor calls us up early this week, and he goes, guys, can we do the show earlier this week? You know, I've got some stuff going on. You know, if we could start an hour early, that'd be great. So we have Toby coming on. Toby's in a different time zone, of course, so we have to coordinate with him and get everything all worked out, and everything's perfect. We all sign on to Skype. We're all ready to go, except Trevor. So I give him a call on the phone. Trevor, what's going on, man? You coming on the show? Well, of course I'm coming on the show, he says. I'm like, well, we started 15 minutes ago. Oh, crap. So he is currently driving like a frantic maniac to his office where he has his internet connection because it's not up in his new house yet. Uh-huh. So he'll be with us in about 20 minutes. So we're going to go through what we've done with guns, and we'll start off with Toby. And then by the time the three of us are done, hopefully Trevor will be here and he can fill us in on what he's done. And then on to our main topic of concealed carry this week. So Toby, let us know, man. What did you do with guns this week?
Well, actually, this year it's been a little bit of a slow year. We had the ammo shortages, obviously, the first part of the year.
That must have been just horrible. I hear you guys still can't get 22.
It's been showing up.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we've been sneaking some in here and there. A few bricks, a few boxes. It's slowing up, showing up slowly but surely.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, we've been doing mostly a lot of dry fire practice, and
when you can't get ammo, what else can you do?
Exactly. Giving it that 1,000-round trigger job minus the 1,000 rounds, right?
Right.
So I picked up a Novak Next 1911 airsoft gun. It's a professional training pistol. So
that's something Trevor needs. Is another 1911.
Yes, I heard. So what do you think he would get next? Maybe that double-barreled 1911?
Maybe. That'd be cool.
I think that'd be right up his alley.
Two alpha. That'd be awesome for Ipsic.
Two jam. Two Mickey.
Twice the weight, twice the problems.
Yeah.
So no, I've been using airsoft because they consider it a professional training pistol. So I've been doing a lot of draws from the holster and whatnot. And the manual of arms is exactly like the real thing, and it functions on what they call green gas. It's like a
it's basically propane. Yeah,
nitrogen mixed or something like that. So it's something to do, and something I can do in the backyard and not have to worry about the police being called because of the big bangs, right?
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people poo-poo the airsoft, like, ooh, you know, it's not real guns, you're just playing with toys. But like you said, the manual of arms is exactly the same. You can get some pretty high-end ones, which are pretty much all metal. They look exactly one-to-one, and like you said, you can practice in the backyard. So it's like dry fire, except you're actually shooting something.
Yeah, and this one did actually cost more than a High Point, so. No, it's a gas blowback, and it's not quite as heavy as my 45 caliber 1911, but it's something to kind of pacify the time. But it's been such a crazy summer that, you know, we've been busy. Melissa's actually gotten a lot more round sound range than I did. She was able to go to a Kathy Jackson class a few months back.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, she's actually had more training than me. And then last Friday, I went to a class for my Utah concealed carry permit, non-resident. And that was a great refresher course. So that's about all I've done with guns, besides lusting after them.
Well, that's fun, too. So, Owen, what'd you do?
Well, I'm going to steal probably a little of your thunder, but last Saturday, was it Saturday? It was Saturday.
Sure, something like that. Don't worry about stealing my thunder. I've got lots of other stuff to talk about.
Got lots of thunder? Okay.
I got lots of thunder, man. No lightning, but lots of thunder.
You and I went to the range for a little while.
Yes, we did.
Shot our ARs and shot our pistols and generally a little bit of training and practicing all kinds of stuff like that.
Yep, that was fun.
It's pretty, boring for the listeners, but...
fun for us.
Got a little shotgun practice in this morning on some Boydies. And, went goose hunting. Opening day for me, it was actually, opening day was Tuesday, but we didn't get out. Everybody else
took fields. Tuesday was raining and pretty miserable, right?
It was, and if we'd found a good bunch of birds, we would have gone because we're waterfowlers and we don't care what the weather is.
Yeah.
But there just wasn't a group of birds for us to hunt that was consistent. So we said, well, we'll wait and find some birds later in the week after they've calmed back down. And we found some birds that I don't think had ever been shot before, actually, coming out of Woodstock right out of town. And
town birdies.
Town birdies. So they were really dumb. anyway, so we and actually where we shot them, we literally could have fired bullets over the town limit line. We were that close to the town.
Oh, wow. Hey, as long as you're outside.
Yep. Well, inside, I don't think there's a bylaw, actually. As long as we're far enough away from buildings and houses and things like that.
Oh, that's cool.
We could hunt. The field actually is partly in town limits. So, again, that's the nice thing about a rural New Brunswick town. There's fields in town. Yeah.
So tell us about the hunt. How'd you set up and how many decoys did you put out and how long did the geese take to get there? And
oh, goodness. So I got up at 3:30 in the morning.
Okay, I'm out.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You lost me at 3.
I got up at 4. I woke up at 3 because I couldn't sleep anyway.
Right.
So I figured I might as well get up. But I got up at 4, get ready. I already had everything packed in the truck. Drive to the field, go out. I'd already scouted the birds, obviously, the day before, so we knew where they were in the field. I have about 3 dozen decoys, which is not nearly enough, but it's what I got. So,
apparently it works.
Yeah, we had 4 guys, and we just set up. It was a grain field with fairly high stubble, and the straw was still all in the field.
Oh, so you had lots of stuff to play with building camouflage and stuff.
Oh, my goodness. You couldn't see. I mean, we just disappeared. I mean, it was so high. A standing up goose, you could barely see its head over some of the stubble. And so they were landing, pretty much had to land with the rows because it was the only place they could land. They couldn't land across the piles of straw. So we were able to set up in such a way that, and there was no wind, so they landed pretty much any way they wanted to. And, I think the first bunch came in maybe between around 7:30-ish, between 7:30 and 8.
Now, for the non-aviation-minded, why is the wind important?
Because geese have to take off and land into the wind.
That's right. Just like airplanes, the more airflow you have over your wings, even if it's from the wind or the breeze, it means more lift. So you can come in slower and take off slower.
Yep.
Very important.
Yep. The geese will not get off the ground or... on the ground. So the first point, anyway, we had a really good hunt. Probably could have had a few more if some of the guys had shot a little better, but.
Oh, yeah. That's right. A couple of misses there.
There was a few misses. We had one guy who was brand new. He'd never waterfowl hunted before. So he was pumped. He was really excited, named Jeff. So he probably doesn't listen. So I'll give out my shout out to Jeff, the guy that doesn't listen.
The guy that shot the worst. Good job, Jeff. Well, do better next time.
But he was new, so it was it was pretty exciting. I like taking new people because they get pretty pumped up.
Get them
they
all
think,
excited.
Oh yeah, this is going to be great, and they watch video, and then all of a sudden they're staring a goose in the face as it's dropping down on them with 15 of his buddies. And
yeah,
it's pretty exciting. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Shot 24 birds, and which wasn't even close to a limit or anything, but
right,
that was still a lot of birds.
24 is a good morning for goose hunt.
Yep. Yep. Considering it, I mean, there was probably only 100 geese going there, maybe 125. So it wasn't like there was hundreds and hundreds of geese coming in all morning. We only hunted till probably 9:30. So 2 hours. So, yeah, it was good. I was shooting my, cool. I'm going to relate this to gun stuff, right? So I was shooting my Beretta Extrema 2 with my Patternmaster choke and 3.5-inch heavy shot BB. Actually, it's heavy metal, not heavy shot, but I made a probably 70-plus yard shot with it and dropped a bird.
So. Ooh, nice. That's some good ammo and some good shooting, I have to say.
Yeah.
And yeah, a good choke, I guess.
It all works together. Yeah.
Very cool.
So, yeah, that's all I did with guns this week. Matthew, what'd you do?
Well, besides the range stuff that you talked about earlier, where we went out and did some practicing and some fun there, we installed the 9mm bolt catch on the AR. That was fun. It took it took a hammer and an anvil and a drill bit to get that roll pin out.
And a yeah,
to get the roll pin. Sounds like out. A bad Looney Tunes cartoon.
Sounds like a whoa. Who's that? Trevor? Did you show up? Trevor, are you here?
Yeah, I'm late. I'm sorry. It's all my fault.
And you're on a phone.
He just admitted.
Yes, that's all my fault too. I'll get to that later. Sorry. Carry on.
Yeah. Okay. We'll come back to you, I guess. Sorry. What was that you were saying, Owen?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
Probably something, but a grinder.
And a hammer and an anvil.
A hammer and an anvil and grinder. Yeah.
That's what my nicknames of my two fists are.
Anvil and hammer? I like it.
Hammer and anvil. I often use reason and persuasion as well.
Those work too. So, yeah, it took a little bit of grunting and some sweating and stuff, but we finally got that in. It turns out, actually, I'll skip to my third point here. The conversion kit, the part for the conversion kit that Brian Holcomb sent me arrived, and it worked great, except that it didn't work at all because the 9mm conversion or the 9mm bolt catch I put in the AR was too big.
Oh, really?
So I had to grind the top of it off. So okay. It's still in there. It still works. No problems. It's just I had to do some more grinding once it got in there. So anyway, the conversion kit is now fully operational. I had that out at the range and did some shooting with it. A lot more accurate than I was expecting. At 50 yards, I got, well, I mean, it's not fantastically accurate. It's, what, 2.5 inches or so at 50 yards. But a 39-grain bullet and a 1-in-7 twist rifle barrel, you know, it's all right. It'll work. That's about as accurate as my gun is with regular ammo. So,
yeah. So have you played around with the different weights much?
I haven't yet. No, I will eventually, but so far I have not. I've just been shooting standard stuff through at 55 grain. So.
So now, how's your upper or lower receiver fit?
They're very tight. In fact, we had to grind the upper in order to fit the lower properly because it was too tight. So it is very snug. I need a punch to drive out the rear pin, the takedown pin. So it's tight.
Yeah, I haven't built an actual AR yet. Fortunately, mine's stayed working as bought, so I haven't needed to tear it apart other than cleaning
perfect.
It. So
I wish mine was like that.
Well, I've been looking forward to, you know, building one, but it's like
I could run a trade
time and money. Something about them damn import laws.
Oh yeah, some and mine's a 10-inch barrel too, so unless you get that $200 tax stamp, you'd be kind of out of luck with that too.
We'd get felonies on both sides, wouldn't we?
Yeah, probably. I'm kind of likening this to I used to drive a Pontiac Fiero. And I have to tell you that I learned more about cars with that thing than anything else because I was working on it every weekend. So I'm likening my AR to this. It's like a Pontiac Fiero. You basically have to rebuild it every time you drive it or shoot it.
It looks fast, but it's still all GM under the hood.
It's all GM under the hood, yeah. Funny. Anyway, Owen and I actually made a holster for the Beretta 72 that I won at the Ipsic Nationals. There's a picture of it on my Facebook. I should actually share it on the Slam Firewall. It is a...
You should.
Fantastic. It is a nice looking rig. Owen outdid himself. It is amazing looking. I'll put that up. I'll post that up actually as soon as Trevor starts talking here, because I'll get bored quickly anyway. So,
is there anything Owen can't do or make?
I don't think so. I haven't given him a challenge yet that he hasn't risen up to. So I'll keep working on that. Maybe.
I accept the challenge.
Woo. So last point. Two more. I took the Beretta to the range, to my range, instead of just shooting it down at Owen's range, and I actually set up a target at 25 yards. And it's actually really accurate. Remember that perfect shot I made, Trevor, at Brian's range, where I put the bullet
right in the zero,
right through the absolute center? I did the same thing with this at 25 yards.
You're a freak.
And the rest of them were not
we
far
know that.
Off the mark.
He's a good shot, too.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I wasn't talking about his shooting.
Insulting me just in general.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, very happy with that gun still. And I got to shoot. I went to the range yesterday, like I was saying, and there's a guy there, and he brought his dueling tree that he just built in his backyard for the fun of it kind of thing. He saw it on YouTube, so he thought he'd make one and bring it to the range, and it worked awesome. It was really cool. He has 22 swingers for it and center fire swingers for it, so you can shoot either full-size, you know, center fire handguns at it or 22s. Anyway, he opened up his pistol case to start shooting, and what's he got in there but a Ruger SR-40.
Nice.
I have the SR-9. He has the SR-40. I'm like, that's a nice looking gun. Looks kind of like mine. Anyway, it's just a little bit wider, and he gave me a mag of 10 rounds to run through it. And this is just factory ammo. So this is, you know, this isn't the downloaded stuff that we use in Ipsic. This is full power, you know, ammo, and it took it very well. It was like shooting a Gen 4 Glock. It soaked up the recoil really nice. I was getting, you know, really fast shots off and accurate. It's a really nice gun. If I were to ever go standard, who am I kidding? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get an SR-40. But if for whatever reason I was going to get a 40 cal, I would get one of those. It was really cool. So thanks to Andre for letting me shoot that and for the dueling tree fun. He gave me his number, so I'm going to give him a call and see if I can make a range buddy out of him and go out and shoot the dueling tree on a semi-regular basis. So should be a lot of fun.
Let me ask you this. You know, I've got the SR9C, the compact version.
Right.
And my wife, she's very upset with Springfield right now since her XDS-45 got recalled, so now it's not good enough. And she was actually considering a 40, and she was looking at the SR-40C. Between the two, I mean, how did it feel? I mean, was the 40 a lot snappier in that frame? Or?
It didn't feel like it. No, it probably was. If I had shot them side by side, I probably would have noticed a bit of a difference. But the SR-40 fits in your hand the same way the SR-9 does. It's just a little bit wider, I don't know how to explain it, but it didn't seem like there was that much more recoil. It seemed to just come straight back at you, maybe just a little bit more, but very manageable.
So you're comparable.
Well, Toby might not see that much of a difference. Matthew and I both shot the Glock 21 SF and the Glock 22 next to each other at Glock Day 2 years ago, and we both commented that the 40 was actually snappier than the 45 because the 45 gun had a larger frame and a larger slide and was simply heavier, so it recoiled less. So if her 45, what did she have, an XDS?
Yeah, she's got an XDS. She's got a 45 ACP that isn't really any bigger than my cell phone.
Right, so then the 40C, SR-40C, is probably going to shoot, either the same or maybe it could be a little snappier. It all depends on the weight of her XDS.
Yeah, it really doesn't weigh any more than my cell phone either.
Yeah, so then it's probably going to feel about the same for her.
Okay, yeah, because I've always understood gosh, I've only shot one or two 40s, and it was just briefly, but yeah, it seems like the 45's got more of a gentler push, and the 40 seems to be just a bit crisper on the snap.
Yeah, well, it's a high pressure round. There's more pressure in a 40 than in a 45, so.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But I would say if she can, go give one a try before she buys one. But
that's not how she does it. She'll just go buy it.
She'll be fine.
There's a reason we have separate checking accounts. That's because she buys more guns than I do.
Well, if she regularly shoots a 40, a compact 40 anyway, I don't think she's going to have any problem with that. She should be fine with it.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I'm more comfortable with her having a larger capacity and a powerful round, but she feels that my 9mm is inadequate. So
really?
Yes, we
you know what? I'm going to send you a study that I recently, well, not recently, it wasn't that recent, I guess, an alternate look to handgun stopping power, and have her read through that, and if she still thinks that 9mm isn't adequate, then... Well, that's fine. I mean, she's entitled to her opinion. We'll still be wrong because she's the wife.
She's the woman, yeah. No, it's. I don't think the facts will change her mind. It's for her. It's. I don't know. She's got more testicular fortitude than I do. She's, you know, go big or go home. That's her. So yeah, it's. I think for her, it's just she just likes it big and powerful.
Like Owen said, bigger bullets are just compensation for poor shot placement. Mm-hmm.
That's funny. All right, well, Trevor, round us out here, man, and try not to take too long because we got a whole topic to go at it with Toby's. But yeah, what did you do with guns this week?
Well, I would have got more done if a couple of buddies of mine had showed up to help me move. Thank you for that, Brian Bolivar.
It is his fault. I have to admit, it is his fault.
It's not entirely his fault.
No, it's not entirely his fault. We're going to blame it on him for now.
Oh, but it was funnier that way, Owen, but whatever. Be the nice guy.
Somebody's got to be.
I'm not saying it's my fault. I'm just saying it's not his fault.
Mostly his fault. So, I would have done more with guns, but I was moving. But I did manage to get the AR build finished and went and tried that today. I also received a smaller grip for my 2011. You know, once again, proof positive that it's not a 1911 because you can't take the frame into two separate parts on a 1911. You can only do that on a 2011. So the grip on the 2011 was a little bit too big. So I had a smaller one come in, stripped the gun apart, reassembled it, but I don't know why it's not working. The trigger is not working right. So I'm going to have to talk to the company and see what's going on with that. I know that the grip safety... Why? Oh, stop. I don't want to hear it. The grip safety has been deactivated, and I'm not sure how he deactivated it, if he did it by filing it, so that the trigger bar can come back all the time without the grip safety having to be pushed in. So anyway, I got to talk to him and find out what's going on with that. So unfortunately, I've reassembled the gun again with the original grip, which is really big for my hand, but I'm getting by with it. I ordered a Magpul stock for my 870, like I said I did. That was shipped from the Calgary Shooting Center yesterday or today. So when that gets in, then I'll continue to compare and contrast the 590 and the 870. I went out today and shot the AR. I put so much slipstream in it that I actually thought it wouldn't run. I did have one malfunction.
Well, you drowned the thing. I mean,
I literally did. I used like half of the little tub. You know,
do not read like how like you don't like you don't need that much. You know that, right?
I know, but you know,
okay. Whatever. As long as you know, I mean, that's fine.
Oh yeah, remember, I know you.
If some's good, more's better, and too much must be just right.
Overkill is just the right amount of kill.
Yeah. Well, what I say, you know, I like to drown them at first and run them until they malfunction, and then clean them and put in a regular amount of lube, right? And interestingly enough, Officer Frank had some members over that were in town for training, and one of the IRC team guys was there. and he, Frank was showing him his AR, and he, you know, it's cleaned and lubed, but he said by their standards, it was dry as a bone. And they take them out, and they shoot them, and then they clean them before they leave the range, and they soak them down again, and they keep them, they run them really wet, and then clean them after every use. And the guys at the Nova Scotia Provincial said the same thing. The guys running 1911s and Shadows and 10 Foglios, none of them had any malfunctions, and they said they run them wet, really wet. A dirty wet gun will run better than a dirty dry gun. Mm-hmm. They run them wet, and then they clean them after every match. And that's what these guns are, right? So I'm going to try and try it that way for a little while, see how it goes. Shooting the AR was cool. The recoil impulse was a little different with the 16.5-inch barrel and a carbine length gas tube. Typical AR muzzle rise, you know, up and to the right a little bit. Neat feeling gun with the complete kind of M forgery style and feel to it. It's nice. I like it. Again, I don't know if it's going to be for sale or not. 590A1 worked great. I put 2 3/4 boxes of shells through it, some number 6 and number 4 and some 3-inch stuff. And the front sight is really big. But the gun worked great. Everybody that was there tried it and liked it. But the thing that I really like so far, maybe the only thing I like about it so far is how it loads. It really does load quickly and easily. That's a huge advantage over the 870. But I think I still probably shoot my 870 faster, but this one reloads faster, so I don't know.
You'll get used to it. Give yourself some time.
Yeah, I'm just not a shotgun guy. Pierre Luc picked it up, man, and he shot that thing. It looked like you shooting. I filled it full of 3-inch, and he just burned through it like a semi-automatic. It was really cool. I just don't shoot shotguns well. But I haven't spent a lot of time with them either. So
you should go goose hunting with Owen. Then you could be the worst one.
Yeah.
Trevor, you should have seen one of the shots. Not that I'm bragging or anything.
No. Not that you're bragging. No, go ahead and brag.
You should have seen one of the shots I made this morning.
What was that?
I was goose hunting this morning. One of the shots I made. It was a 70. Yeah. It was at least 70 yards. Shot a goose out of the air.
I saw the pictures in the back of the truck was just full. Oh, yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was awesome.
A lot of work, though, to process all that. Holy jumping.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had four guys. So a couple, you know, one guy took a few. The other guy didn't want any. He had to go to work. And then Dave and I split up the rest. So I ended up with like 11 birds or something like that.
Still pretty good.
How many bottles of meat will that turn into?
That's probably, I want to say, 8 or 9.
Yeah, you heard that right, listeners. Cool. Bottles of meat. Hey, pass me the bottle of meat, would you?
That's how we roll. Some people bottle jams, he bottles geese. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Not feathers and all, just the meat.
Feet, bills.
Yeah.
Jason picked up a .17, and he got a Marlin. Pretty neat gun.
I think we'd call that what caliber did he get?
0.17 HMR.
Oh, so a 17 HMR? Okay.
Yeah. Well, what's the problem?
A 0.17, really?
All right, fine.
I bought myself a 0.22 the other day. It goes along great with my 0.45.
He struggles with the difference between a 1 and a 2, so, I mean, give him some slack, you know, on the point.
I had 2 malfunctions today. I'm going to keep track of the malfunctions on the 2011. It wasn't my ammo, so I'm going to naturally blame the ammo.
Right.
After I was done shooting, Harold wanted to try it, so Harold used his ammo, and we had a failure to extract. So locked the gun open, dropped the mag, and racked the slide, and then it came out. So I'm going to blame his ammo just because it makes me feel better.
Yeah, sure. Start with that and then see if it continues to happen or not.
Speaking of ammo malfunctions, I hate to butt in here again.
No, go ahead. You can pull my trick this time.
Really not my style, but I did a pretty bonehead thing today. After the first group of geese came in, we three shots, bang, bang, bang. Mm-hmm. They fly away, but immediately you reload because you never know when the next flock's going to drop in. So I start to shove another shell in my gun, and I shoved it in the magazine backwards.
I've done that before. Isn't that horrible?
Oh, I didn't get it all the way in when I realized it, because when you have your thumb on the end of the shell, you can feel that it's not the right end. But I already had it started in. So I'm like freaking out because two guys go after the geese that are down in the field. You know, and there could be more coming in any time, and I can't get the shell out of the magazine. It's stuck. I'm freaking out. I'm going, there's going to be geese coming in here, and I'm not going to be able to shoot.
Anyway, I did that. I did that on one of my guns once. I had to take the thing completely apart to get it out.
I took my knife out, and I was like, if I have to cut this shell into pieces, it's coming right now.
Well, that, and
I just saw the edge of this of the case of the brass on it. So I jabbed my blade into the edge of the brass and like pried on it and popped it out.
That's as bad as me grabbing my tube of chapstick out of my pocket and loading it in my single shot. Whoa!
I didn't work at all. But that bird has some really glossy lips.
No, I'm sorry, but that's worse.
Oh, that's funny is what that is. That's awesome. All right.
And then I had a malfunction on the air. I had a double feed.
Cool.
And, during a rapid fire, I was, I sighted it in with a 36, I'll call it yard. I just stepped off 36 paces, set a target up and zeroed in on that. I was actually doing my impression of Al Pacino in Scarface.
Right.
Say hello to my little friend. Not the same gun, I know, but whatever. So I started doing some rapid fire from the hip. And, I got double feed. First time that's ever happened.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, the magazine I was using will remain unnamed, because I don't want to, I don't want to give the manufacturer a bad name or anything like that. Press stick.
Very nice. Very nice.
That was it. That's what I got done.
Cool. Sounds good. Well,
that's fine.
Not bad, Trev. You kept it in under half an hour this week, so pretty good. Even with us butting in and interrupting you.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah? Which I'm convinced is why my segment always takes so long.
Right. Definitely. It's not that you do a whole bunch more stuff than we do. It has nothing to do with that.
No.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that, you tell us everything you do with guns.
I don't, though, actually. I leave all kinds of stuff.
Just the interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's okay, because I live vicariously through Trevor. It's like, oh, wished I'd have bought that.
Yeah. That's all some of us can afford to do is live vicariously through Trevor. So, Trevor, we do thank you for that. Keep it up.
I can't even do what I do, so,
Cool.
Well,
I was just going to say, why don't you take us into the main topic?
All right, cool. So, CCW, to carry or not to carry? If that was the question.
Yeah, if only. I wish it was the question for us up here in Canada. Sadly, we don't yet have that option available to the mainstream public. The option is there. Unfortunately, only the very few and very privileged get to receive a permit of such a type. But well, we're working on it. Hopefully we get it soon. But what we did was the last couple of weeks, Trevor actually brought it up and started asking listeners to send us feedback regarding concealed carry. If they would, if they wouldn't, what they would do if they were going to conceal, how would they prepare for it? Just general feedback. And so what we're going to do is now we're going to go through all these emails, and we have our resident expert on board, Toby Lee. who does actually conceal carry a firearm, because he is an American and he is afforded that right. So, he's obviously the expert, because none of us can. So he kind of laughs it off, says, I'm not an expert at this, but well, you can and we can't. So yes, you are.
Well, and this is probably a good place to put in the disclaimer that this topic covers a lot of moral and legal grounds. So this is just food for thought. Talk to a lawyer.
And that's why you're here.
Yeah, you're the lawyer.
Toby, that's why you're here. That's the part that I most want to emphasize on, or put the emphasis on, is not, I would use this holster and I'd use this gun and I'd use these bullets because they're the deadliest. No, that's not really what I want to focus on here. I want to focus on, yes, the moral aspect behind it, the mindset behind it, and the legal aspect behind it, and hear your take on it and what you went through with regards to all of those before we get going, or before okay. we finish the show.
Sounds good. We want to start off with questions.
Well, what emails? Do you want to do, Matthew? You want to pick Toby's brain first, or do it at the end of the emails, or what?
No, no. Here's what we're going to do. Let's have first. Toby. Yeah, I was just going to say, let's have Toby kind of walk us through quickly how he got his concealed carry permit, why he decided to get it, and what steps he did to prepare. I guess so. Toby, yeah, if you can kind of somewhere along those lines, kind of cover those points yeah. if you can.
Start with why, Toby.
Yes.
Why
yeah.
do you feel the need to carry a gun, or why did you want to carry a gun? Why do you carry a gun?
Yeah, interrupt him again, Trevor.
You know that, and it's going to be hard to keep this quick. My wife and I both. She has her permit also. We both had to do a lot of soul searching for this. I believe Nebraska's had the CCW on the table since 2007, and it wasn't until maybe about 2 years ago that I even seriously considered getting it. I thought, well, maybe someday it'd be nice for the convenience of transporting, right? And the reason why is, you can pretty much pick any day out of the news headlines. In fact, just last week, a lady was murdered in a very nice part of Omaha for no other reason than she happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time and left behind three kids. And this is actually somebody that I have coworkers that know the family personally. And my wife actually knew her husband from childhood. So that kind of hits close to home. So it's those kind of reasons. You don't get a pick when the time that you would need it would be, or even why. So when you realize that there's a need for it for you personally, and everybody has to come to that point in their life. I believe everybody should have the right to conceal carry or carry openly, but I don't think that everybody should. That's kind of a whole other subject there.
But yeah. How do you pick and choose?
Well, that's something that a responsible citizen would have to, I mean, obviously, if you're a convicted violent felon, I think we can all agree that, yeah, probably not those people. But, right. One of the things you have to ask yourself is, for example, I was talking to a friend just within the past week or so, and he's like, somebody gets in my face, I'm not one to back down. He goes, I'll stand my ground. I'll get back in their face. And I'm thinking, you're probably not a good candidate. or that's something that you need to overcome. You've got to kind of look at the kind of person you are. I mean, objectively, another thing, too, is your religious beliefs or your moral beliefs. If once you've decided that, well, you may consider some type of self-defense tool, do your personal religious beliefs permit that? A lot of people like to cite the Ten Commandments, well, thou shalt not kill. Well, you can lose a lot of things in the interpretation or the translation, but I believe it was originally basically phrased as murder, and I personally believe there's a difference between killing and murder. I think a lot of that has to do with the malice and intent in one's heart. So these are just kind of the things that you've got to consider if that's something that's even on the table for you. You have to look inward. I did. My wife did. It was something that I did a lot of soul searching, and the more I learned, I actually almost decided, no, maybe that's not a responsibility that I want. But then as I was able to learn more and kind of break things down for me internally, then I decided that is something that I believe is on the table for me personally.
And so are you prepared for or have you tried to or considered what you need to do to prepare for the aftermath in case you were ever involved in what would be deemed a clean shoot?
Yes, that's a lot of the food for thought here. Even if even if it's deemed a clean shooter, a righteous shooter, or whatever, you never know what the political system's going to do. You know, we've seen that here recently down in Florida. And there's, and there again, learning how to deal with that aftermath. Now, I know you're a graduate of Mag 40, so you actually are the expert on this more than I am. That is my goal. One of the things that I did in learning more about this was I joined the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, and they have a network of attorneys that they're associated with that will help assist, and they are able to put some money up on the table to aid in your legal defense. But more importantly, it came with a stack of DVD lectures from people like Marty Hayes and Masada Yoob that, you know, really good educational material. And I haven't even gotten through them all yet. And it's, you know, it's I would say kind of maybe a good precursor to a Mag 40, because I believe from what I've heard about Mag 40, there's a lot of that that's covered. But, you know, it it addresses a lot of the concerns for the legal aftermath. And there's, you know, for somebody that's never had to deal with the legal system, you know, what most of us only know about what we know about the law is from Hollywood, which is not a good source on anything.
Yeah, it's generally basically if it's on the movies or in the movies, it's probably wrong. It's basically how I look at that. Even anything on TV anymore, it's pretty much wrong. If it's on TV, it's wrong. It used to be the other way around. Well, I saw it on TV, it must be true. Well, yeah, I think it's gone the other way.
Yeah. If it's on the internet, it must be true, right?
Yeah, right. So, that's even worse.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. You know, you've got to look inside and decide if that's something you can do. And then two, you've also got to ask yourself, along with your religious beliefs, can you take another life? Possibly. You know, you don't carry a gun to kill. You only carry that to stop a threat. And you know, there's other means to be able to do that. But why a gun? Well, a gun has been proven to be the most effective tool to instantly stop a threat. That doesn't mean that it's always going to instantly stop a threat. But
it has the best track record of doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, can you take another life? If now Owen's got kids, I don't believe the rest of us do. But
I sort of have kids, actually. This is actually, I guess this is a perfect segue into announcing that the executive producer is expecting our first little rugrat.
You're kidding. So, congratulations.
Woohoo. I can't believe there might be two of them. This is scary.
Yeah.
Why is that on?
I said, I can't believe there might be two of them. This is scary.
A mini mat.
A mini mat, yep.
So. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was the most awkward segue in podcasting history. Oh, by the way, my wife's
pregnant. Yeah, hey, it worked. He said, I think Owen has kids, but neither of the other you two do. But, well, I sort of do. But anyway.
One in the oven, right on. We'll see. Now the stakes are even higher for you.
That's right. Although I prefer pork chops, but, you know, that's fine.
Well, you know, and I don't know if this will be one of the questions, but that's something else for parents to consider is, you know, a lot of people have that kind of a question mark. Well, you know, if you've got kids around,
yeah.
Well, can you live with yourself? If you have the option to carry or use some type of defensive tool, can you live with yourself if you had that option and didn't choose that and something happened to your child where they were abducted or harmed? You know, when you could have possibly had the tools available to help prevent that.
Yeah.
You know, those are the kind of things that you have to ask. You know, like I said earlier, I never considered, I mean, my guns were never loaded. And now there's at least two in the house that are always in condition one. And I never considered the guns that I had, even, you know, they were nothing more than safe queens. It's just something to take out, you know, and the family get-togethers were going to happen out at the farm for entertainment. I never considered them for self-defense until I met my wife. And I feel that I have an obligation and a responsibility to come home safely to my wife every day. And that not only does that mean physically, But as Trevor had asked earlier, you know, surviving the legal aftermath. And
yeah.
So there's a
yeah,
lot.
You don't want to be locked up in jail. You want to, you know, you want to do everything right. If you get into a situation, you want to be prepared for that. You can't just carry a gun blindly, not knowing what to do, what the laws are in your area, when you can shoot, when you shouldn't shoot, when you should not even pull your gun, you know, all those things. And if you're not prepared and you do something stupid, well, now you're behind bars for 5 to 10 years. Where's your family now? Because you didn't get the training that you needed to know when to do what you're supposed to do.
Exactly.
And if I could add to that, Matthew, not only are they putting their family and their life in jeopardy by going out there, you know, not being prepared, then they give the critics of concealed carry so much ammunition when there's a bad shoot. Say, see, yep, these people should not be allowed to carry. They're not taking it seriously and they're not prepared. And then it makes the rest of the concealed carry population get tainted with the same brush.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, if you're going to do this, don't just think about yourself. Don't just think about your family. Think about the fraternity and the brotherhood that you're entering. You know, you're putting everyone's rights at jeopardy if you don't do this correctly to take this seriously. And there are lots of people that simply carry because they call it constitutional carry, right, Toby? I've got the right to do it, so I'm doing it, and that's good enough.
Yeah, exactly. And in some states, you can do that. You know, it's, I think it's more properly considered permitless carry, but yeah, there's people that do that. So training, you know, boy, and good quality training. That's one of the things that I've been kind of hearing. I've been fortunate enough to have gone to trainers that were excellent, and they spent a lot more time on things like conflict resolution and de-escalation than they did about, you know, proper shooting stance and grip. I mean, that was covered too, but the emphasis was on, you know, de-escalation, you know, and that's another thing too. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, but that's an excellent point. Anyone can teach you to shoot. When you go take a concealed carry course, it shouldn't be a course that simply focuses on how to teach you how to shoot. It should focus on everything else.
Yeah, the shooting part, you should already know how to shoot before you go to a concealed carry course. You should be able. Yeah, I mean, yep. The actual mechanics of the shooting shouldn't even be something that's covered in a concealed carry course, I think. It should be all about, like what Toby was saying there, de-escalating the situation, how to get out of situations, how to carry yourself, and how to approach situations in such a way that you never, ever need to draw your gun. The best shoot is the one that doesn't happen.
Exactly. Yep. I couldn't have said it better.
Situational awareness. And yep. And for those people out there that know how to shoot and want to learn everything else, that's where MAG 20 comes in. If you want the legal aspect and some shooting, well, then go take the MAG 40, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, you know, so funny story with that. Oh, I'm sorry. Real quick here.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
My wife works with a gal that has her concealed carry permit. She's actually from another state. She has never, ever fired a gun in her life.
Well, at least she has the permit so that if she does ever, you know, I mean, shooting a gun is, you know, shooting a pistol is, of the three, rifle, pistol, shotgun, the pistol is the hardest to shoot properly. But, you know, at least she has the foresight to actually go get a permit and actually carry a gun to protect herself. I mean,
well,
I know we harp on this. Everybody needs training. Everybody needs training. I agree. Everybody needs training. But that also being said, those who can't afford training or those who don't have, you know, just for whatever reason can't get it or, you know, don't practice shooting, at least they still have a chance, right? I mean, if this lady gets mugged or raped and beaten in a back alley, at least she now has a chance to survive.
Sure.
I got to disagree. Having the permit and going to take training is yeah, okay, not everybody can afford training, but Toby said she's never fired the gun, Matthew.
I agree. Yeah.
Go to a gravel pit and fire the gun.
Yeah, oh no, she should.
Without ever having fired it. She's liable to shoot herself. She has zero experience with a firearm. She's never fired one, but she carries one.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if she so much carries. She's got her permit. Now, where they work, they're not allowed to carry at work, so I doubt that she carries, but she's got it.
Okay, so she may not actually even be carrying, but she got the permit.
Yeah, but she's got the permit, and we've offered... Yeah, we've offered to take her out. It's just everybody getting schedules together.
Right.
You know, and at least, you know, get her familiar with the rules of, you know, how to safely operate it and whatnot.
Oh, that is key. I mean, you got to know how to, I mean, hopefully if she does decide to carry and she's never fired a gun before, I hope at least she carries a revolver or a Glock. So there's nothing to mess up, just point and shoot. But, you know, I do want to make the point, though, that in the States, you have the right, and as a human, we all have the right to protect our lives and to do that in whatever the best way that we deem possible. And in the States, of course, that means you can get a concealed carry permit, or if you're lucky enough to live in one of the other states where you don't need it, you can carry a gun. And yes, you need to practice, but that being said, at least you have a chance, even if you don't have time, Trevor's right, though. I think Trevor's right. She needs to at least go out and shoot in a gravel pit, for crying out loud.
Well, now, two thoughts here. You know, how many times do we see a story in the headlines? Of course, it never makes major headlines, of somebody that, you know, maybe even a child that, you know, there was a forcible home entry deal and the child got the parent's gun and had never really shot before but was able to defend themselves.
So yeah, I've seen at least half a dozen of those.
Yeah, and it's not, having a gun is not a magic talisman. All that is a fighting chance. Now, you want the training to make the best use of that fighting chance to increase the odds in your favor, but it's still, even at that, it's no guarantee. Now, along those lines, are any of you guys religious at all or even spiritual?
Yep.
Yes. Yep.
Now, how do you feel about suicide?
Frowned upon.
But I mean, you know, there's a lot of religions where, you know, that's kind of the mortal sin, right?
Right.
That's the one where there's no repentance because you're not there left to repent or whatever. Yeah. Well, let's see how to put this. I feel that life is one of the most precious gifts that we're given. Now, I believe that God would want me to use whatever means are available to defend that life, be it mine or somebody else's. So to choose not to defend your life, you know, some people could even argue that that would be akin to suicide, you know, to just give up and not even try just because of whatever other convictions they may have. So, you know, even something like that's food for thought, you know, to be a willing victim. And just, well, I can't take somebody's life, so I would rather it be me.
I know that's a mindset, but I have such a hard time to get my head around that mindset. And I think some people won't admit they have that mindset, and they simply say, I will call the cops, and the cops will get there. When in the back of their mind, they know when they're staring down the barrel of a bad guy's gun, the cops will only be there to pick the brains up off the wall. I mean, they're not going to make it. But they won't admit to the fact that they're willing to roll over and allow their life to be taken before they will stand up and take the responsibility to protect their own life. They just won't. They won't. They won't.
It's the mindset. Reality. Yeah, it's the mindset of the sheep, right?
Well, and everybody's got to draw their own personal line in the sand.
Sure, yeah. You know, but to do that in ignorance, I think, is a big mistake.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. I was just going to say, I was going to do the same thing you were, Trevor.
All right, then. I'll go ahead.
Well, let's roll into the email then, the feedback that we got, and we'll get Toby's reply and his thoughts on each one, and then the rest of us can kind of chime in too whenever we have something to say. So, Owen, you've been far too quiet. Why don't you bring us this first email from Kyle?
All right. He says, hey guys, I think the decision on whether to carry or not really depends on where you live. I used to live in Kingston, where I'd never even consider it. However, now I live in Thunder Bay, so I would definitely carry if given the option. Some examples of crime in Thunder Bay. A credit union was robbed at gunpoint, 3 kilometers from my house. My cousin, who was working as a courier at the time, was robbed at knife point. There was a robbery at a convenience store 100 meters away from my 84-year-old grandparents' home. It seems like a Max convenience store is robbed at least every week. Multiple other credit union robberies. other issues such as substance abuse and public drunkenness, mostly from but not limited to the First Nations populations in the city. We have a lot of white trash here as well. We're the seventh most violent city in Canada with the fourth highest homicide rate.
Those are some pretty dim stats right there to start off. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Let's face it, Thunder Bay, there's not much else to do. But
yeah,
anyway.
No. What are you going to do this week? I don't know, let's go kill somebody. All right.
Although the grocery store... Although the grocery store I work at has never had an armed robbery, at least as long as I've worked there, there have been several shoplifters who have been violent with our staff, i.e. fistfights. There have been several situations in the parking lot where I've had to confront people, but luckily none of them turned violent. A few could have. As for what I'd carry, I have to admit it would probably be a Glock 19, due to its reliability and simplicity. Trevor, I see no benefit in carrying a larger caliber with today's ammo options. I'd also consider a CZ-75D compact. As Trevor knows, I'm a big fan of CZs, although admittedly, I haven't researched CZ's compact and subcompact lineups very much. I'm of the opinion that Canada shall issue concealed carry with a permit and a requirement to take a training course. Carry a firearm is a big responsibility, and knowing me, I'd probably have to take multiple training courses, for example, Mag 40 and then Mag 80, before I could trust myself to carry concealed. Anyway, I guess that's all I have to say. Cheers and keep up the good work. Kyle.
He brings up that ammo thing again. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to post that link on our actual Facebook page so all the listeners can go have a look at the handgun ammo lineup and how this study has at least shown its effectiveness across the different calibers. But on those other points, Toby, do you have anything to... I don't know if there's anything really... I don't think there was a question there. I think that was just kind of what he would do. So
yeah, well, you know, Kyle, and actually has a lot of good thought there, you know, with his remarks as to the location. You know, it's like, well, you know, I'm not going to that part of town, so I shouldn't need that. And you know what? You're right. You probably won't, or certain areas of town the odds are that you might need that more. And so with that, I would suggest that's just kind of playing the odds game. You know, do you feel lucky in this part of town or that part?
In this case, he's talking about two completely different cities where Kingston had less crime and Thunder Bay has more crime. So I think in Thunder Bay, he'd carry everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. You don't get a pick where you might need to defend yourself, and you don't know if you run across the guy in the great part of town, he could be somebody just having a bad day and you cross their path at the wrong time and they lose control and whoops, hey, guess what? We might need to defend ourselves, and it, to whatever level, maybe not even where lethal force is necessary, but you know, so it can happen anywhere.
I think it has to be a lifestyle. If you are going to carry anywhere, you need to carry it everywhere because it needs to be a lifestyle choice.
And yep, you know what? That's exactly right. And I do. Since I've had my permit, I've forgotten my gun to not take to work twice in over a year. And the only time I don't carry is if we're going out and I know I will be drinking, or, for example, at my brother-in-law's wedding because he got married in a courthouse, and obviously I couldn't carry there. So, right. Yeah, carry always.
Do you carry when you take out the trash?
Actually, I do, unless I've disarmed for the night or I've been drinking, yeah, which means I've disarmed for the night.
Well, this is the thing that I always... Go ahead.
My wife is always armed, so I know I've got backup. In fact, my mother-in-law, my wife was downstairs in the family room, and my mother-in-law came in upstairs. She said she knocked and she got greeted by a .45. I wasn't home. My wife was waiting for me. She heard footsteps upstairs and knew I wasn't supposed to be home yet.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Well, just before you get on to that, Trevor, just hold that thought if you don't mind. Talk about carrying at home, and this is always something people come, you know, they carry all out in the streets and everywhere they go, and then they come home and they take their gun off. The most common and most likely place to be a victim of any kind of violence is your house.
Absolutely.
And that's the nice thing in Canada is we can actually carry at home. As long as we don't leave the house, and some argue the property, but I believe it's the house. As long as you don't leave the house, you can carry your pistol on you everywhere you go in your house. As long as you don't have a loaded magazine in the gun, you're good to go. So keep a loaded mag in your front pocket, holster on your gun on your hip, and away you go. You're good to roam through the house and be ready. Like Owen says, that's the most likely spot you're going to be assaulted. So,
and that's not legal advice, kids.
That's not legal advice. No, we are not legally advising you to do anything. This is for information and entertainment only. You guys make up your own minds. These are our opinions only.
You know, and
if you
something
want to find
interesting
in your house, go ask your lawyer or the police. I know a lot of police would disagree with what you just said, Matthew, but that's because they don't necessarily know the law. They would assume, oh, you can't do that. So before you do anything, find out and consult, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Don't take our word for it. Find out for yourself.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is you mentioned taking the trash out. Well, the town cop actually lives one house away. And if I didn't throw like a girl, I could probably, you know, throw a softball at the police shop around the corner.
Nice.
Toby, what about the family's reaction, hers and yours? I mean, you don't necessarily go on Facebook and Facebook everyone in the family and say, oh, by the way, my wife and I now carry. But was there anything, like, how do you come out and tell your family, you know, we're armed all the time now? Do you have that conversation? What's that like? Because I know if we were allowed to carry tomorrow and I chose to carry, the first battle would be with my wife. Because she has a concern and a mindset right now of a liberal sheep. No offense, sweetie, but she believes that the presence of a firearm could escalate a situation, not de-escalate it. She doesn't get. She's come a long, long, long way. But you know, I mean, obviously, if somebody came into the house to harm us, she would be in full support of me using a firearm to protect our lives. If there was absolutely no other way to get out of the situation we were going to die, then of course she would approve of it. But as far as carrying, we've had this conversation, said I wouldn't like the idea of you carrying. If you were going to carry, basically I wouldn't go with you while you were carrying.
Well, I got a reply to her. Concealed means concealed. She doesn't need to know.
No, that's right. So,
yeah, however, that marriage thing, you can invade each other's personal space, so it's only a matter of time before she finds out.
Oh, I'm happy to see you, dear. It's not a gun in my pocket.
No, you know, it's funny. We'll be walking through the store, and my wife will reach over to give me a little wifely squeeze on the cheek, right? Oh, there's your gun. Yep, you're carrying. Those things are hard to hide from a spouse.
I'm sure I have other family members that would come right out and say, well, if you're going to carry a gun, please don't come visit anymore. Right. So did you experience anything like that?
A little bit. Yeah. It's kind of like coming out of the closet. That's how I would imagine it. But yeah, it's interesting. My in-laws aren't crazy about it. They have, you know, my father-in-law's got a Browning Sweet 16. He's got some hunting shotguns and stuff. And we've all, been shooting, family Christmas party, gone out to the range. Right. But they're not really up for that. My mother-in-law had asked my wife when she got her permit, the question was phrased something like, well, you know, how are you going to answer to God if you've murdered somebody? Well, first of all, this is only for, you know, defensive reasons that we carry. You know, we're not the aggressors and we'll do everything to back down from a fight. So, you know, that part wouldn't be really accurate, but that goes back to what I was saying earlier about your moral and religious convictions. My father-in-law, he's not for it. I think he's just waiting for the second coming, and that's that. So it's not really for them. And you know, I've been over there a few times. They're not crazy about it. You know, be over there for a quick visit, and they'll offer me a beer, and I'll say no, I can't because I'm carrying. And I try to, you know, do it discreetly, and then I don't overstay my welcome and go home. My parents are pretty cool with it. My mom works in an area of town that I wish she would consider that as an option, because it's not, it's kind of like what we were saying, playing the odds game. But it's just, it's not something that she feels she has a need for, but they're okay that I do it. Does that answer your question, or is that, it's a little bit of both. I haven't run into any outright hostility. However, I was speaking with a friend of my brother-in-law's, and he came out because, you know, we don't hide from the fact that, you know, we carry, because obviously we're into the podcasting world with politics and guns, so we're outspoken and out there as advocates of responsible carry. But he came out and asked me the question, well, do you carry all the time? And I'm like, well, of course. And then it just blew his mind when I told him that it's always loaded when it's in my possession.
What? Yeah. I'm why like, well, wouldn't it be loaded?
Exactly. It does me no good without the bullets in it.
Oh, hold on a sec. Let me load up my gun.
But it was interesting. The mindset. Day,
it's like somebody said on some podcast I was listening to, I don't remember which, how many cops carry an unloaded gun?
Yeah, none of them. At least not the smart ones.
Well, exactly. And cool. we carry it for the same reason a cop would. It's just that our purposes are different, but it's still for self-defense. I mean, we're not out there, you know, looking for criminals, but should a criminal come find us with violent intentions, we have that as one option to defend ourselves.
Yep. And in the United States, the citizens ever have less constraints around using their firearm than a police officer does.
Yeah, and the police don't even have a responsibility to protect you. Go
figure.
That's
right. Yeah, they're just there to clean up afterwards. We've discussed that before. So, all right, well, let's move. Sorry, do you have another point? Yeah, geez, we're on the same wavelength, Trev. You and I, we're doing the same thing.
So since he left Owen out of this one, I'll take it, I guess.
All right, go for it. Are you sure you know how to pronounce all the words?
He says, hello, T for Latte and Captain Warning Head. I mean, oh, sorry, that's his
one
shot.
Oh, man, now I got to edit. You jerk.
Yes, you do. You earned that.
And now
enjoy
Owen.
Enjoy the new show.
Owen's left out. That's too bad. Don't you feel bad for Owen?
No, that's why I decided to read it, to rub it in some more.
Even though he didn't deserve it.
He says, enjoying the new show. Just got caught up on all episodes. So in response to the last episodes, query. What training and firearm would I pick? CCW is already legal in Canada. Unlike our American brethren, it isn't a right. We must beg the RCMP to grant us what?
Like I said, you know all the words?
Yeah, Matthew.
See, I looked it up in advance and I was ready to go, but you jumped in, so I let you have it.
All right, so question. What if the laws change?
He's just going to skip it.
Yeah. What if the laws changed and it became as simple as checking a box on your RPAL application? Here are my steps. Sit down with a lawyer and get a good solid grounding on what the law is all about. 2, take MAG-40/MAG-80 courses. Train annually. Keep records of the training taken. Picking a firearm. Now, there are some tough choices. With the seasons and clothes we wear in Canada, you go from a Daniel Shaw question of what to carry when on the beach in flip-flops to does Air 15 under this parka to does the Air 15 under this parka make me look fat? Winter gun, fashionable under parka and woolly sweaters, STI Eagle 5.0 2011 frame in 6 and 357 SIG, extra pop against winter clothes. That's true. Spring autumn, they say black makes you look skinny. H&K 45 ACP. I shot that gun that he's talking about. So far I shot both these guns he's talking about. It's an H&K. It's 10 rounds of 45 ACP. Manna from heaven. Summer. What is going to fit with that Speedo? Walter PPK and 32 ACP might be a good choice here, but in my Speedo, Colt King Cobra 357 Magnum, the champagne of pistol cartridges, revolvers still work in water, sand, with no hiccups. That's true. And again, I've shot all the guns he's talking about so far. The same.
Hey, have you shot all these guns, Trevor? Hey, did you open carry in Utah?
I did, and I also shot a 300. Uh-huh. If I had to pick this one, and only one, for all seasons, it would be the H&K 45. Also, easy to get a 45 ACP carbine to keep it in the car or the cottage. STI is just a little too large for light clothes. All you 1911, 2011 haters just hate any gun with 11 in it. Learn to count past 10. Life gets better. Ammo for all would be...
I did. I got the 17.
Oh! Stop that perfection. Ammo for all would be Spear Gold Dot. Personal choice. In your travels, any updates on the Swiss Arms and CZ858 reviews? Please keep the episodes coming. Hope you both can... What about Owen? Hope you both can make it out for the Easter weekend gun show in Calgary next year. Weekend of April 20th. Later in the spring should be better for Walking Dead golfers. And right now I am planning on going back. So yeah, Owen's on the show too, Ross. And you know that.
Not really.
I personally haven't heard anything about Swiss Arms, but recently, like yesterday, there was a post from Wolverine on CGN about the most recent shipment of CZ858s being seized at the border and declared prohibited by the RCMP.
Yeah, no, we don't want to get into that too much because that's not what this show is about, but the limited information that I know is that it may be that the shipment that came over was an incorrect firearm, like they sent the wrong one, and that was a select fire or easily converted. So it may simply be just that what they sent over was wrong. But that's not... I don't know anything about the Swiss Arms either, so just keep your ear to the ground, and hopefully we'll have some news for you as soon as we hear it. You'll hear it. So yeah, some good choices there. The HK-45 as a kind of all-round handgun, it's not a bad choice, I guess. If you like Melissa says, Toby's wife, I guess if you're going to carry big, right? 45 all the way.
I'm surprised out of all the guns that he has, he didn't list his Steyr. He's got one of the Steyrs. Mo's got one too. I can't remember what Steyr it is, but it's a little 9mm. One of the nicest shooting polymer guns I've shot. That H&K was awesome too, but as you know, Matthews and Meg releases in that odd location.
Right.
But all the guns that he has, I'd carry his Steyr, actually.
You're talking the Steyr M9A1?
Okay, I think
it's
so.
It's the Glock lookalike?
Sure. Yeah.
It's kind of sort of glocky. It's a polymer frame, right? What?
Yeah, it's a polymer frame. It's got these funny triangular sights on it.
Yeah, it's the M9. Yeah, I've shot one of those before, too. They're pretty cool. Yep. So, okay. Any other points we need to cover on that?
No, good choice in guns, especially the 357 Colt King Cobra.
Those are always fun.
That was my very first revolver, was a Colt King Cobra, and boy, does that set the bar high. Yeah, the last one that got away.
Yep.
All right. Well, sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
Not sorry.
Oh, you're just talking about guns still? Imagine. Okay, this next one comes to us from Archie Perry, and he outdid everybody because he sent it as an audio clip. So stand by and have a listen.
Dear Slamfire Radio, Archie Perry here. In your last episode, you posed a question. Would I consider carrying concealed in Canada if I could? And if so, what would I do? I most definitely would, but I would not take it lightly. I already generally keep very good situational awareness and avoid circumstances that might see me in harm's way. This is largely due to the fact that I do not have a reasonable means to defend myself. I, of course, would also be very cautious even if I was packing heat. I would be excited to carry, and like everything I take on, I would learn as much as possible. This might mean that I would read books, the internet, I would join clubs, and take courses. I would probably be interested in a very basic beginner's course, and also in some kind of advanced course. I would also be more inclined to join sports such as IPSC, etc., those that utilize tangible skills. I think an armed citizenry would be a terrific asset in assisting the police and fellow citizens, and permanently stopping a few scumbags too. The best part would be reducing the incidences of rape and burglary, and other crimes. Of course, I'd also get to carry. Currently, I have a dirty old revolver and 357 Magnum. I think if I could carry, I might trade that in for a 44 Mag, or possibly something in 50 cal. Nothing says it has to be small, except for the concealed part. Thanks for listening. Your pal, Archie Perry.
All right. So 50 caliber for Archie Perry then. Going for the Desert Eagle. 50 Action Express. Why well, not? Go big
actually,
or go home.
I'm trying to get mine back. I sold it to a family member trying to work on a deal. And yes, that would be my choice for open carry should I decide to do that on occasion.
Oh, if you're going to open carry, that's going to be the one gun to detour them all.
And if I get that back, I'm going to see if Jason Christensen can't make me a Black Mamba for when I want to buy like four pant sizes bigger. it's a lot of fun. That 50 Action Express is in that particular gun is not unmanageable. It's just that the whole gun weighs 4 freaking pounds.
Yeah. It's heavy.
So good on him, yeah. You know,
cool.
And I think regardless of whether you're required to have a permit or if it's permitless carry or constitutional carry, you know, it's our responsibility to train ourselves to know the laws, to act responsibly, to do everything in our power when it's an option to de-escalate any potentially dangerous situations. Now, having said that, you can't always. You know, somebody comes up to your car and tries to drag you out of it, and if you're boxed in, there's not much you can do. But it's our responsibility to learn as much as we can and to encourage others to do that. You know, and especially where in the case of this coworker of my wife's, where she hasn't shot, but you know, we're encouraging her to, you know, you can start off by reading books and watching DVDs. And of course, Kathy Jackson's Cornered Cat website has just invaluable resource. It's huge, just packed full of information. And of course, Mag 40, which Trevor can attest to. So yeah, you know, all of the above, brother.
The thing that he mentioned that sticks out the most in my mind is the situational awareness, and I'll paraphrase here a little bit, don't dumb things with dumb people in dumb places.
Exactly.
And you'll avoid a whole pile of stuff.
Yep. Yeah, that'd cover a lot of it. But sometimes trouble just comes around the corner and smacks you right in the face. So
that's
you know,
right. That's why it's nice to have the option.
Yes, exactly. And you know, you guys got rid of the long gun registry. And I see it as only a matter of time, you know, but you've got to get enough people involved and enough people demanding it.
Yep. You're right.
Yeah. But just don't have the numbers. I personally don't think we'll ever see concealed carry in my lifetime.
Well, that's because you're a pessimist. I think we could easily get concealed carry as soon as the Americans keep up what they're doing. Because their crime numbers are dropping really fast, and it's easily directly linked to concealed carry permits. It's not going to be easy, but once our crime rate is double the Americans, and it's heading that way, once it happens, the citizenry is going to cry out for something. The wrong person's going to get mugged and raped and attacked, and somebody's, you know, husband's going to get murdered, and they're going to start crying the way Susanna Hupp did. And that's going to be our catalyst to start getting CCW here in Canada. I think it can happen. And it, unfortunately, we've got to go down the wrong road to get to it. We've got to get, you know, more crime, which is, you know, the last thing that we want. But it's inevitable. Where we have no CCW, crime's going up. Violent crime rate in Canada is rising. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why. All of the sheep are unarmed and all the wolves are. So what else can we do?
You know, they say gun control isn't really about the guns. It's about control. So, you know, but you want to know, as I'm sitting here thinking, one of the interesting little side notes to Melissa and I getting our CCW permits, I think we've become better citizens. And by that, I mean that, you know, I'm more apt to watch my speed and not, you know, push that 5 or 6 miles an hour over the speed limit. You know, in at stores, you know, hold the which I would do anyways, but I'll wait a little longer if, say, a lady's coming up with their groceries trying to get out the door. I'll wait a little longer just because I get that little chuckle that, you know, most people aren't necessarily open to the idea of guns or even concealed carry. And then to know that, you know, these people might not be for that, but yet they've walked past a gun within inches of them and the person was holding the door open.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we've got to work to break some of these biases and guns, you know, unfortunately I blame Hollywood completely for a bad stereotype. When I got my first purchase permit, because in Nebraska for purchasing a pistol, you have to have a purchase permit. This was in a previous lifetime, and I had a previous wife, and I had very long hair, down to my waist, as a matter of fact. And there was a lady that came into the sheriff's office as I was filling out the paperwork for my permit, and she made a snide remark that says, well, if you didn't have such long hair, you might have a better chance at getting a gun. And I thought, okay, well, thank you very much. Have a nice day. And then as we were leaving, I just instinctively held the door open for her, because that's just what we do here. And then she's like, well, great, now I feel like an ass because I said what I said to you. And I thought, well, you know, it's thank you for recognizing that. Still have a nice day. So, yeah, you know, it's I don't know if it lends to that an armed society is a polite society, but I'll tell you what, my wife quit driving with her middle finger.
Yep, I can imagine.
You know, just the little things you don't think about. So yeah. I think, you know, if more people had that option and took it seriously, you know, I think we could make the world a better place.
I think you're right. Well, let's hear from Mike. Mike writes, the first of two Mikes, apparently. So this first Mike, he writes, hey guys at Slamfire Radio. I've listened to all of your episodes and have enjoyed your style of podcast. Sorry for not responding to your request about people's opinion about CCW, as I have been on holidays. Don't worry about it, Mike. Apparently you got back just in time. I wish we could conceal carry. I believe that it would reduce violent crime and make people more polite. And armed society is a polite society. Wow, Toby, you picked the perfect time to jump that in there. I think my number one reason for carrying, though, would be to protect my family, because I never want to feel useless when my family is in trouble. I asked my wife, also a shooter, what she thought about CCW, and she said she supported it, but her biggest concern was having to purse carry, because she didn't think she would be able to conceal carry a pistol. Fashion first. My wife and I had a question about CCW in the States. How did it come about? We always hear these stories about how before Florida allowed CCW, all the aunties were screaming that streets would run red with blood in old Western-style shootouts over a parking spot. But how did they manage to convince the public and politicians that it should be legal in the first place? What was the history behind it? Was their method a viable way for us to push CCW through as well? Thanks again for the great podcast, Mike. So, Toby, do you know the story of Susanna Hupp and how it all kind of kicked off?
Well, I'm familiar with her story a little bit, and I believe she was out of Texas.
And she was.
So
yep.
She got that for them. And I don't know the whole history on concealed carry, but it never really used to be an issue. There was no such thing as concealed carry or not. Just people did that did. And I believe it was after the Civil War that those in power started saying something to the effect of, hey, you know, all these people we've been oppressing over the years. Maybe we don't want them to have guns now that, you know, they're due some payback, right? And I believe that's kind of where the history of the oppression started. And I believe it has grounds in racism. And then, of course, then that's just been a tool of, like I said, gun control is not about guns, it's about control. And I think it's just snowballed from there. It's just that now, and I think Florida had something to do with getting that back a number of years ago. And then I think it had more to do with the way the law was written about shall issue rather than may issue. But don't quote me on that. This is all just bits of speculation on my part from what I've heard over the years. But I think that's kind of the gist of it.
Right. Yep, that'll work.
or how about, I don't know, really.
No, I mean, I already
told Toby that he was allowed to say, I don't know.
That's right. That is perfectly acceptable on this show.
But I believe it had something along those lines. And like I said, don't quote me on it. But, you know, I mean, it never was an issue until they decided to make it an issue and take away those rights.
Right. Yep. Cool.
We're just now getting them back.
Yeah. All right. Well, Owen, bring us this next one from the other Mike.
From the other mic says, hey guys, just wanted to throw my 2 cents into
That'll be a nickel. I'm sorry. We round here in Canada now. We no longer have pennies.
Actually, it would be rounded down, so
You're throwing in free. Nothing. Thanks a lot, Mike. On to the next one. No, I'm just kidding.
On to your question about CCW in Canada. If CCW was available tomorrow, I wouldn't do it as a daily routine. In my 35 years, I've never once felt unsafe, such that carrying would have made me feel more secure. I live in a good part of a safe city, Calgary. And even though I work in a fairly shady part of town, there was a shooting outside my office a couple years ago, and there's many mornings when I get off the train, there's blood from a stabbing or axing on the platform.
Sounds like a good, okay.
I still don't feel the need to carry it on a daily basis. That being said, if a CCW system was brought in with some sort of training requirements, I support that other people would want to carry. I would probably carry when out hiking in the mountains, as it's more convenient than carrying a short shotgun or rifle. Keep up the good work on the podcast.
That's interesting. And this is one reason why I like gun owners as much as I do. Mm-hmm. They may disagree with a certain thing, or they may say, no, I'm not going to do that, but I don't mind if you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so, you know, he's got his right to say, you know, I don't think I would do it. And that's perfectly fine. He probably has perfectly valid reasons for that. But then he says, it's okay, I support other people who want to. So, you know, thank you for that email, Mike. I appreciate that. But now let's go into why you're wrong.
When you're walking off the train and there's blood on the platform from an axing or a stabbing? Like, who goes around axing people on subway platforms?
I need to ask you a question! Oh no, wait, that's a different axe, isn't it?
2 years ago, I shared his opinion completely. He sounds exactly like I did 2 years ago when we talked about this on Canadian Reload Radio. I don't really feel the need to carry, but you all go ahead, that's fine.
Well, yeah, to be honest, I'm not far off of him, because in my job, it's not feasible for me to carry. Okay.
Yeah, you'd have a hard time doing it. Right? You'd need an ankle holster or something.
I mean, t-shirt.
Yeah, Brian Holcomb said the same thing.
Yeah, pants. I'm crawling in underneath of sinks, and I'm digging out in trenches, and I'm, you know, it's really hot in the summer, and I'm taking my shirt off, and it's, you know, I'm just...
Rawr! Oh, wait. Awkward.
And so I can't, frick.
All right. One, next one.
Does anybody else want to reply to Mike, anything that he said there?
Well, it seems to be kind of a recurring theme. You know, people feel safe. You know, I have never, ever needed to use really even force, let alone lethal force, to defend myself. But just because I haven't, doesn't mean that sometime in the future I may not, you know, or I may need to.
I wear my seatbelt every time I drive my car, and I hardly ever get into accidents.
Exactly. And, you know, and have an insurance for your car. You have it hoping you never, ever need it. But if you need it, you really want to have it.
That's true.
But it goes back to that. It's a very personal decision.
It is.
It's a huge responsibility, and it's a lifestyle change. So, you know, there's a lot of things for people to consider. I mean, yeah, you got to come to that point in your life. But I really appreciate the fact that even though he doesn't feel that would necessarily be for him, that he doesn't want to take away my right should I choose to do that.
Yep. I concur. Very good. All right, Trevor, you're up. It's Alex.
All right. So Alex says, to whomever is present for the recording.
He's been listening recently.
Yeah. I guess he's implying that there's some, you know, inconsistency or always somebody new.
Or always somebody missing.
He says, I wrote to you guys when you were doing the other podcast about building an AR and shooting on a buddy's property down here in Texas. But to the topic at hand, as far as concealed carry goes, I've been doing it for the last couple of years now. I carry a Steyr M40 A1 in a Super Tuck Deluxe inside the waistband holster.
That's the same thing as the Steyr M9 you were talking about earlier, Trevor.
But just in 40 cal?
That's correct.
cool.
It's a nice gun.
I'm not a hefty. Pardon me?
Sorry, go ahead. I go ahead.
Okay, sorry. There's a delay on the line. That's why I'm kind of making it awkward. I'm not a hefty guy and weigh about 180 pounds, and I can conceal it very well. It's not the lightest or thinnest gun out there, but it fits my hand like a glove, and I can hit stuff fairly accurately with it. You might wonder if I carry it everywhere, and I do, where legal. That said, I don't take it off when I'm at home. I initially did during the first 3 to 5 months, and I also didn't carry it with one in the pipe. It took a little while. It took a little time to get used to it, but that's the only way I carry it. I will have to admit, it makes life feel a little interesting, as considering places I go solely based on the concealed carry reciprocity with other states. But after having carried for as long as I have to admit, I feel completely naked when I do not carry. On the side note, especially for Trevor, I also hand load for the 40, and I found that IMR SR 7625 produces very similar ammo to factory ammo in the way the recoil feels. I tried some clays, and that felt pretty much like a 9mm in 125 grain. I've also tried Hogman long shot, and you want to stay on the low side with that, since you will get some strong loads. The powder in long shot seems to not have completely burning when the bullet exits the barrel, especially with loads that are 50% to 100% max charge. Feels like shooting a 357 SIG with good reason, since the bullets go about 1,400 feet per second with a 135 grain bullet. Anyhow, keep up the good work and stay safe. So first thing, though, Alex, you're giving some great information here on reloading for or hand loading for a 40 cal. I don't know if you're carrying your hand load in your self-defense pistol or if you're carrying factory self-defense ammo. I'll just say that, you know, Masada U recommends factory ammo, and I won't get into why. Go take the course, but Masada U would not recommend anyone carry hand loads, and it's not only about possible unsafe ammunition, but there's also some legalities involved in carrying hand loaded ammunition, so you might want to look into that. Just throwing it out there because you mentioned it.
Yeah, I'm guessing he probably carries factory loads and just uses his reloads for practice, as my guess. I don't know if that's true or not, but we're going to go with that for now because that makes him look like a better person.
Well, like I said, I only threw it out there because he talked about
that's,
it. So
that's right, yeah.
What I know is. So now, to his point about carrying at home all the time for feeling naked without it, and going back to what Kyle said about not trusting himself right away to carry a gun and would have to take, he would go take multiple Mag 40 classes. Like when I first got there, Tom's like, here's a gun, put it on. And I was like, whoa, I just wasn't ready for it. I wasn't 100% comfortable right away. I was like, well, at least let me get through one day of class. Let me learn something before I take on the responsibility of putting this thing on my hip. I didn't want to just put it on because I was allowed to. I didn't feel psychologically comfortable enough. Sure, my shooting skills are there, but it's so much more than that, right? I wanted some knowledge, some background before I just threw it on. And I'd like to go back and take Mag 40 again. And Carl at the Gun News is always talking about how he's always going back and listening to his Mag 40 notes. He recorded himself reading the Mag 40 notes, and then he listens to it like a podcast just to keep all that information fresh in his mind. When I got home from Mag 40, it seemed so weird to leave the house without a gun.
Yeah, I imagine it gets very comfortable very fast, and like you said, you feel naked without it.
It's scary. It did. It really did. It was like, I have to leave without my gun. Sucks.
And another thing. No, I'm just kidding. if you didn't notice, we had to take a quick break there, and there was no way I could edit that smoothly without anybody noticing, so I figured I'd make it blatantly obvious. So we're back. You mentioned here, Alex, that you say here, I initially did during my 3 to 5 months, and I also didn't carry it with one in the pipe. It took a little time to get used to it, but that's the only way I carry it. Now, does that mean you still carry it without one in the pipe, or did you mean to say that's the only way I carried it, so you now carry with one in the pipe? I just wanted to caution anybody who, well, I don't caution anybody about anything because I'm not a lawyer. But I personally would not carry without one in the chamber. It doesn't make sense to carry a gun that's not ready to go right away. What if in the confrontation where you need your sidearm, your left hand or your support hand is otherwise occupied? Maybe you're holding back your wife. Maybe you're fighting off the attacker. Maybe your left hand's been injured. How then do you cycle your firearm? I know there's ways to do it, but why not just have that gun ready to go, draw and fire, you know? What do you guys think about that? Is carrying without one in the pipe a good idea? Am I off base here?
Well, what he's described is exactly what I went through. It took me about 3 months before I was comfortable enough with myself. And I don't know if maybe I was proving to myself that I could handle it safely on a daily basis as a matter of routine. But yeah, it was about 3 months before I carried in what would be condition one. I'd have a loaded magazine.
I think, Toby, if you spent the amount of time on a range shooting competitions that we do, you never would have questioned it and you would have put one in the chamber right away.
Well, you got to remember, this is coming from somebody that never even kept them loaded or considered them for self-defense.
Exactly,
so it was a comfort level for me. And then finally, it was one of those personal decisions where the more I thought about it, the more freaked out I got about it not being ready at a moment's notice. Because just like Matt said, I could envision so many situations where you need that. And especially if something were to happen up close and personal, like in your face, where something just changed, somebody got inside your bubble where, you know, you didn't have both arms free to work the action on it to get it ready to go. So, you know, it goes in with that soul searching part. So. Yeah, I overcame it. It took me about 3 months. But yeah, now it's like, what? Not one in the chamber? Doesn't do me any good then.
Yeah, well, it's like the point was made, cops don't carry with an unloaded chamber. But it's a comfort thing, and everybody gets there when they get there. And a gun with an unloaded chamber is still better than no gun at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good. All right, well, let's move on to the next email. This one comes to us from Tim. He writes, "Howdy, fellers. Two episodes in a row without Trevor. Can we say heaven? I kid. He's missed. Aim better next time, Matthew." That's funny.
All kinds of jokes there.
I was writing about your upcoming carry episode. First off, condolences to all you fine Canadian listeners for not being able to exercise your right to self-defense. Listening to all the podcasts on the CRR network always scares me that it could happen to us one day if we lapse in our vigilance down here. I'm in Arizona, which is one of four states blessed with constitutional carry. For your listeners, that means we don't need a permit to carry loaded firearms, just need to be of age, 21, and legally allowed to own the firearm. The state does grant permits as well, which carries benefits. To get a permit, you need to have a complete course and a background check. The main benefit of the permit is reciprocity with other states to carry there. Although of the states bordering ours, Utah is the only one that recognizes the Arizona permit. Another huge benefit is when constitutional carrying, you give up your Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights, meaning you can't refuse a search or refuse to answer questions from a law enforcement. That's interesting. So if you have the permit, you can refuse this search, but if you don't, you have to comply. So interesting. Something to think about for sure, especially if you live in Arizona. Arizona has open and concealed carry. I exercise both. 90% of the time it's concealed. My everyday carry is a Ruger SR40C fitted with the XS Big Dot Tritium sights. Is it Tritium? No, it's Tritium. That goes back to like episode 20 of Canadian Reload Radio, so I'm sure some of the guys are getting a chuckle over that. Before we go on, Toby, your wife was thinking about an SR40C, was she not?
Yeah, it's one of the options she's considering. So, you know, carry, go big or go home.
Yeah, and you carry the SR9 the SR9C, right?
The SR9C. Yes, I've been very happy with this gun. I've got well over 1,000 rounds into it, and I've never had a malfunction that was blamed on the gun, and only a very few on ammo.
I've got to say, I've got an SR9, the full size, and if I were to be able to conceal carry in Canada, I would be 100% comfortable carrying the compact version of the same gun. It is just a fantastic firearm. I really like it.
Yeah, it's kind of what Glock should have made.
Well, it has its improvements and it has its drawbacks, namely the magazine disconnect. I really don't like that safety, but anyway, yeah. I digress from the email here. Let's continue on with it. It reads, it rides in either a Mitch Rosen leather pancake style holster or concealment solution sidewinder. With the laws here, we don't have to worry about printing, which is why I have gone with outside the waistband instead of inside, which is hot here in Arizona. The times I am open carrying, it is with a Colt 45 Ruger Blackhawk and a full Western rig, and that is generally reserved for days when I'm going out hiking in the national forests that surround Prescott. Well, hope having another opinion helps you boys out. Keep putting out the good stuff on the airwaves. Tim from Prescott, Arizona. And I believe it's not pronounced Prescott. Didn't we get schooled on that once? And we told him, no, he's just wrong. It's not what he said. It's actually Prescott because that's how it's spelled.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't remember the other way. So we're going with Prescott. Yeah, that full Western rig, the 45 Blackhawk, that'd be cool to carry around town, huh?
Yeah, that's one I'll open carry when I'm out doing yard work. I've got the Ruger Super Blackhawk and 44 Magnum. So nice. I need to get a good rig for it. I got basically just a cheap holster that's mostly for at the range, but around the house, I'm not too worried about it.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, well, Tim, thank you very much for your feedback there. We do appreciate that, and you've got some really good points and some good information. So keep vigilant, and don't lose your rights down there.
Amen.
Owen, bring us Jeffries.
Jeffrey says, I had a couple of slamfire comments for you on episode 19. First, whomever was saying about Trevor having troubles with the grip angle of his 2011, probably me, I think this is sort of a stupid statement. Oh, thanks, Jeffrey. Just like I think that when people complain about the Glock grip angle. The only way that would be a problem, I think, is if your wrists don't bend. Otherwise, do you just line up your sights and pull the trigger? I don't get the debate. Shooting what is comfortable for you, but I fail to see how grip angle will really make a difference if you're following the fundamentals.
Okay, so before we get into the next paragraph here, yeah, Owen, go ahead and clarify.
I think my point on that was muscle memory is an incredibly powerful thing. And if you have been shooting for as long as Trevor has, as competitively as Trevor has with one grip angle, when you, without a great deal of practice and rebuilding that muscle memory, when you draw that different gripped gun, the grip angle, instinctively you may go to a Glock angle grip.
You know I've done this, actually.
I do it all the time.
Which results in you not finding your front sight.
Well, exactly. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying you'll be less accurate because you will find your front sight eventually and you'll pull the trigger, but it'll slow you down. And then you're shooting this for competition. It will slow you down. So that was my point, was muscle memory may take over and you will have to work very hard to overcome that muscle memory you've already built in.
Yeah. So Jeffrey, the question, the debate is not necessarily about comfort and physical comfort. The debate is about what Owen said, the muscle memory and developing new muscle memory.
So how's that going with your muscle memory? Just give us a real quick update on how that's been going. I suppose you've just been drawing, probably you're building it up, I'm guessing, and you're probably going front sight first and then adjusting your grip and making sure that everything's right.
No, I'm making sure that I get a good grip in the holster, and then I'm breaking down the draw into the four steps slowly to develop new muscle memory, and then popping straight out to target and tracking the front sight on the way out, right? And I'm really, it's a hard focus on the fundamentals, starting over, going slow, developing new muscle memory, and it's coming along. I did some dry fire practice with the timer and compared it to the video I made a couple of months back where I was doing it with my Glock, and it's not there yet, but it's going to get there quick. I'm not worried at all.
So it's going to be good. I think the point here, Jeffrey, is that you're wrong.
That's awful, but anyway, carry on with
that. But funny, so it's okay. So you, Owen, bring us the rest of the email here.
The other thing you were talking about, the difficulty of concealing up there, Not that you can, but half of your problem is that you guys have that stupid 4.2 barrel law, so you can't really own the very concealable guns as is. It is much harder for me to conceal my Glock 17, though I do it sometimes, than my 26, which works with almost any clothing. That also helps with the comfort thing. So it seems like if you were doing a discussion about what if you could carry in Canada, to also be what if you could actually own a small pistol up there. That comes from Jeffrey.
Yeah.
The big thing I find, though, with concealability is more the grip. We get back to grips, but more the grip length than barrel length.
You're right. Now, that being said,
it does make a difference, but the grip makes more of a difference than the barrel.
I think you're right.
But because Canada will probably get permission to carry before we get permission to carry the right gun.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, that's probably right. We'll be able to carry full size ones, but no compacts. But yeah, that's a good point, Jeff. You know, because we have that stupid rule, it would be a bit more challenging for us to carry. Now that being said, if we could also have the smaller guns, off the top of your head, guys, do you have anything that you'd pick in a heartbeat that you'd carry?
Well, I'm already thinking of a Glock 19 with the big barrel.
Right, Owen. What did you say?
Glock 19.
Glock 19, yeah. SR9C for me. I just talked about it a couple minutes ago. So, yeah. So, yeah.
Well,
that
makes sense for you because you shoot that gun well. So, why not?
That's right.
Well, and the nice thing about the SR9C is down here, at least where I live, it comes with 110 round and 117 round magazine. And the 17 round is the full size magazine with just a little slip on filler deal. So, you can get the full size grip with the shorter length.
See, all of ours come with 10-round magazines up here, but they're the full-length 10-round magazines. Because not only do we have stupid 4.2-inch barrel laws, we also have no more than 10 rounds in the magazine.
Well, and since this is all hypothetical, we'll just say hypothetically you got concealed carry and they wised up on your restrictions and made everything unrestricted.
Yep. So, was that a question?
No, I was just saying if we're dreaming, let's dream big.
Right.
Yeah.
So the thing is, Owen's Glock 19 is dreaming big because we can't, like right now, we can't own Glock 19s.
Yes, we can.
Because the barrel's too long. Or too short.
Yeah, fix it a little bit, but it's not horrible. I held one at the charity shoot. I forget who the listener was, but he had a new Gen 4 Glock 19 with a Lone Wolf barrel.
Yep, you have to get the longer barrel, yep.
Yeah, but it wasn't horrific. They look really funny in the 26, but in the 19, I can live with it.
You want to see something looks funny? Look at a Beretta 9 or a Beretta 72 with a 6-inch barrel on it.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, Trevor, go ahead.
He says, Ralph Russell says, Trevor, Matthew, Owen. First off, love the new show and what you guys are doing, including all the squirrel moments.
That being said, just kidding.
You asked what the listeners would do if CCW were legal in Canada. I'd probably phase in my carry as it would be new to me. First, only during personal time, then at work, if allowed. I'd sign up for a Mag 40 if I could swing it. I'd like to take that next year anyway. Regards, Ralph.
That's a good way to do it.
I think that would be a natural progression for anybody where they would, you know, okay, I'm going to carry this thing around the house so I know what prints, what doesn't print, and then, okay, I'm going to carry it to the corner store. And, yeah, I think that's actually a very smart thing to do. Just don't try and jump right in right away and ease into it.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like you said, it's that personal comfort level, you know, and bring yourself up to it slowly.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. All right, well, let's kick off the last email of the show. This comes to us from RJ Woods. We saved it for last because it is a novel and a half, but it's a good one. So listen close, guys, and we'll talk about it in just a minute. So from RJ, he writes, "Hey, guys, it was great to meet you guys at the charity shoot, except for Owen, but I'm sure we will cross paths in the future, maybe at the 3-gun shoot at Restigouche in the fall. I think Jess and I might come down for that." Now, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Jess and Rick, like I said, we met them at the charity shoot, and it's funny, I actually know Jess's brother. So That was interesting. Anyway, he continues on, ATC is a great idea for the show. I must apologize. I meant to send this in earlier. I hope it's not too late. I'm not really much into sending emails, so this is a bit of a long ramble about ATC, but here's my area of interest. Now, ATC, for Toby and our American listeners, is the Canadian version of CCW. It stands for Authorization to Carry, and that's what our permit is called, if they would ever give them out. RJ continues on, I'm a pilot for an airline in Canada out of Toronto. I have an active interest in shooting, maybe more than some, so that leads my interest of getting airlines in Canada on board with the U.S. airlines. Their Federal Flight Deck Officer Program has been a great success after it was popularized because of September 11th. We, as responsible gun owners, are mostly interested in the ATC program to be the good guy with the gun when the bad guy with the gun shows up. And when the police are late for the show. And I have to say, when you're cruising at 36,000 feet and you're the guy in the cockpit and you call the police, it takes them a little while to get there.
You usually have to go to them.
Usually, yeah. So how's that for service? So that being said, what do pilots do in the air when an active threat is trying to get into the cockpit? Currently, we have a crash axe up there. But swinging an axe in a small space doesn't really offer a lot of protection, at least not nearly as much space as the train deck we were talking about earlier where the guys were getting axed. My EDC at work is a flashlight and a tactical pen, an Oakley vertical messenger bag that was designed to carry a hard body armor plate. This bag allows you to hold it as a shield in the event of an active shooter situation. If that doesn't work, I have some poor airline meals that I will offer the threat to take him down a few hours later. I would like to add an M&P shield 9mm in the future for my ADC if the unicorns and leprechauns ever get together and approve ATCs. The FFDO program in the States has been going strong and a good deterrent against any threat. Over 100,000 flights a month are protected by the program, and the numbers are growing. Pilots are volunteer only. They pay for training out of their own pocket with no cost to the airline or the general public. FFDOs receive no compensation for their service. These are highly motivated, well-trained, and dedicated professionals who volunteer their service to protect the nation's aviation system. And I think that's the way you should do it. I don't think paying somebody to go, you know, somebody who doesn't want to, that I think that's the wrong way to do it. I think if it's a volunteer program and people want to do it, they're going to be the ones you want to do it anyway. That way you keep the people who just simply aren't interested away from the gun and away from accidentally shooting out the cockpit window, I guess. Airline pilots are among the most highly trained and carefully screened professionals in the world. They are routine and procedure-oriented, level-headed, and stable. The nature of our job requires us, airline pilots, to make critical decisions in extremely time-compressed environments. Airline pilots perform expertly day after day in stressful and sometimes life-and-death circumstances. Every person that ever boards an airliner places their trust in the pilots, and the airline pilots earn that trust every day by safely operating tens of thousands of flights. It is illogical not to trust pilots with firearms to be used in defense of our passengers and our aircraft. The program requires extensive background screening and psychological testing of pilots. Pilots also receive classroom and practical training in the use of firearms that would be the equivalent to what armed Sky Marshals receive. Sky Marshals cost about $3,000 per flight, unlike the FFDO cost of $15 per flight. Pilots are provided with frangible bullets made of highly compressed powdered alloys rather than solid lead or other materials such as those used in standard handgun bullets. These softer metal bullets are designed to shatter on hard surfaces, which make them safer to use in flight on in-flight pressurized aircraft. But they are very destructive to human tissue, but it's unlikely that they will do any serious damage to the fuselage, and not such that it would cause a depressurization problem. Few negative points so far. One U.S. pilot discharged his firearm in the cockpit. apparently said he was stowing it away. Well, apparently you don't put it away with your finger on the trigger. The last negative point, a pilot left his bag, which included his firearm, unattended, and a passenger walked off with it, and it caused the airport to shut down for a few hours. Apparently he wasn't listening to that repeating message that goes off every 5 minutes, please do not leave your bags unattended.
They don't do that anymore.
No? Oh. The bag was returned. Oh, interesting. The bag was returned and no one was harmed. Other than that, it's a great success. That all being said, Canada has a long way to go. It's good that you can protect yourself in the wild or protect cash leaving a bank, but what happens at 37,000 feet in the air? As airline pilots, we are entrusted with an aircraft valued at many millions of dollars, thousands of gallons of jet fuel, and the unquantifiable value of the lives of our passengers. Today's final line of defense for the new hijacking threat involves the unthinkable specter of military fighter jets shooting down a defenseless passenger airliner. A more reasonable line of defense prior to that horrendous measure would be to establish the Federal Flight Deck Officer Program in Canada and provide pilots with the equipment and training necessary to defend our passengers, crew, and airplane. That's all for me. Thanks, guys, for doing what you do. See you soon. From Rick. So, Rick, yes, I hope we do see you soon. I hope you come out, you and Jess come out for the three-gun in Restigouche in the fall. That's October 19th, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah, that's a good point, all of those. Well, what do you guys think about the pilots carrying guns?
I think it's basically the same as civilians carrying guns. You have the people on the ground who are there anyway acting as first responders.
Yeah,
I think if pilots were carrying guns, 9/11 never would have happened.
You're right.
Yeah.
Toby?
I concur. Yeah, they're already responsible for how many lives up there. It's just like arming teachers in schools. You know, give them the tools to effectively defend themselves and their passengers.
Yep.
And under the same kind of system that he's talking about, it's not for everybody, not every teacher would, not every teacher should, but those who were motivated and wanted to get the training and could take on that responsibility both physically and psychologically, yeah, why not, right?
Well, you know, it's already been proven that an unarmed population is got its own problems, because they're the law-abiding citizens are the ones that are paying for the crime. You know, but in both blood and money. We found that doesn't work. So let's try the other way, because you're never going to get rid of all the guns. And even if you could wave your magic wand and every gun on the planet is magically whisked away tomorrow, you still got disparity of force. So,
People showing up at schools in China with knives stabbing children.
Yes,
that
exactly.
That happened the same day or the day after Sandy Hook, but you never hear about it.
Nope.
Crazy's crazy, gun or not.
Yep. Cool. All right. Well, that was our last email. I think I'm just going through here. Let's finish off with some closing thoughts on CCW and ATCs. So, anybody have just some kind of final remarks before we wrap it up?
Well, the reality is, for you guys at the moment, is it's not really a realistic option. I would highly recommend that people look at other options that they can use to defend themselves. And get some training, martial arts training, having tools available like some of these flashlights. My wife and I carry a Streamlight that's like 600 lumens and has a strobe feature and a DNA collector on the end that we carry.
DNA collector, I love it. I've got one of those.
Well, we carry that where we can't carry legally, because, we obviously disarm as law-abiding citizens. It's not even an option for us to break the law there. So that's one of the options that we have available to carry where we cannot carry our gun. And I'll tell you what, 600 lumens, especially if it's already dark now with a strobing feature, even if you're expecting it, you
that'll you disorient you quickly.
It will. It will. So, yeah. You know, and I don't know what kind of laws Canada would have on something like that, but I mean, good Lord, it's just a bright flashlight. So, you know, even those kind of things, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the other tools that would normally be available for self-defense usually require some kind of a close proximity to the threat.
Yeah.
Whereas at least, you know, you have some standoff capabilities with a firearm, but that's just right now, that's not an option. So, you know, do some soul searching, do some research and see what tools you can have available that wouldn't necessarily be considered self-defense tools that would be perfectly legal for you to have.
Yeah, the only issue that we have here in Canada is we have, it's not really called anything, but it's like the intent law, I guess. If you're carrying a knife for self-defense, it's then considered a weapon, a weapon dangerous to public peace, and you can be arrested for it.
Well, exactly.
So if you're carrying a knife for the purposes of opening boxes and cutting string, then you're perfectly fine. So you got to be careful in Canada. We can't recommend anybody carry anything for self-defense. We simply can't do it because that's against the law. We can't carry anything for self-defense. Otherwise, the police will, you know, they'd be able to use that against you in a court of law. So
oh, shit,
you what you need to do is the mindset is all we can offer our listeners in Canada. The advice, keep your wits about you, keep your head up on a swivel, keep your situational awareness, be ready to use anything at your disposal for self-defense because that's perfectly legal. Anything that you have at your disposal is perfectly fine. So if you choose to carry something simply for self-defense, you probably shouldn't, but if you can think up of another reason why you might want to carry that for, you know, maybe pepper spray for dogs. I mean, you can legally buy pepper spray at Canadian Tire for dogs and bears. And if you're out in the woods and a bear comes along, well, you can use it on him. And if, well, a human comes along and tries to attack you, well, you can use it on him too, because you had it there with you anyway. So
it's interesting though, Matt, I was reading one of the cans for the bear spray. And it actually says on it, if you use this on a human being, it is a federal offense.
Mm-hmm. Now that said,
that's just written on the can too.
Yeah,
you know
it
what,
is a federal offense if you do
it to commit a crime. If you use it in a convenience store to rob somebody, they'll go after you that way. If you use it to stop somebody from raping you, they're probably not going to charge you federally.
No, they won't. In fact,
maybe not.
That's why they put it on there as a deterrent for criminals, right?
That's right. So, yeah, be careful. Go ahead, Jeff.
It's like the collapsible baton that I carry in the dash of my car.
For dogs.
I carry it in case I need to break a window open on a car at an accident scene to get a victim out. That's why I own it, if ever I'm asked. But should my life be in danger and that's the only thing I have to use for self-defense, then it's legal because I'm not carrying it for self-defense. I have it for other reasons, but if I need it, it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one thing, one tool that can never be taken away from you.
Your
mind.
Fists of fury. Oh,
no. I was going to say your mind. But
well, my mind's been gone for quite some time, so I don't know.
You know, that's something, like you mentioned several times, situational awareness, but being aware of your surroundings, tools at hand, being able to talk yourself out of situations, you know, you can never have that taken away from you.
That's right.
Your mind and your ability to fight through something is the best weapon you've got.
So you could say then that your mind is the weapon.
And you should
and you
train
should
it well.
Train it well.
well, the quote Ozzy Osbourne, of all the things I've lost, I miss my mind the most.
Oh, that's funny. We just lost Trevor for some reason. I'm going to try to call him back here and see if he'll answer.
Well,
for some reason,
he
hung up on us.
I need to wrap things up because I have to cook my wife a steak.
Yeah, we're actually done here in about 2 minutes. And that's funny because the last thing I wanted to do was read this email or this iTunes review, and it has Trevor written all over it, so I'm sure he wants to hear it, but I guess he's gonna have to wait for the actual show to come out to hear it now. So coming to us from some guy in Calgary, it's titled, What Did Trevor Do This Week? He says, if you can't get enough of Trevor Furlott's baritone voice, and this is the podcast for you. The former archery world champion discusses guns, Ipsic, and his hatred of 1911s. The only thing that would make this podcast better is if they removed the 15 minutes where Matt and Owen get a chance to speak.
Wow. See, now I was going to introduce this section, you know, of the best iTunes review. Go to iTunes, leave a 5-star rating, you know, and a review. And if you make it funny and, you know, stroke Trevor's ego, you might hear it on the show.
That's right. And well, this guy did. Oh, very good. Well, this has turned into the longest Slamfire Radio episode ever. We are sorry for that. Not really, but you do have a pause button on your MP3 player, so you can you can pause it and come back to it later if you have to, although that warning should have been at the beginning, not at the end. It's a little bit too late for that now. But Toby, well, thank you so much. Sorry, go ahead, Toby.
Oh, I was going to say, just blame the dirty foreigner.
It's the dirty foreigner's fault.
Somebody's got to carry the water for Trevor.
Yeah, somebody's got to. All right. Well, Toby, thank you so much for joining us. We'll let you go cook your wife a steak because she deserves it. But before I sign off, please remember to go listen to the other network podcasts on both the Canadian Reload Radio Network and the Crusader Podcast Network. Also, go check out Toby's podcast, Politics and Guns.
Yeah, that would be Paul's podcast. He just is gracious enough to let me tag along for the ride.
Right. Well, close enough. And please go like us on the Facebook page. I mean, it's. I'm not going to give you the updated numbers, but it's still pathetic. So please go help us out there. I posted the picture of the holster Owen made for me, and I posted a link to that handgun caliber study. So go read those anyway. And while you're there, while you're there, like us, and yeah, that'd be awesome. So,
and even anyway, if you don't like us,
like us anyway. Yeah, definitely.
And
definitely.
Get your mother to like us, and your grandmother.
Sure,
even pass though it they don't listen.
And I hear there's a library in the area that needs some likes too.
No, we're trying to beat them. Leave them out of it. Very good. All right. Well, thanks again, everybody, for joining us. Sorry it took so long, but we hope you enjoyed it. We will be back next week with what is we're hoping to be the Rimfire episode, because it'll be episode 22. So stay tuned for that.
Thanks, Toby.
Thanks, guys. And hey, can I play Trevor?
Yes.
And I'm Ron Burgundy.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Very good. I'm going to take a pause here real quick and go listen to the answering machine, because I'm sure that's Trevor been trying to call me for the last 15 minutes nonstop. So you two talk amongst yourselves, and I will be back in a minute.
Are we on the show, or? Okay. I'm assuming this is off show.
We're going to guess that, or it's going to make the outtakes. Quick, we can talk about them.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't do my makeup or hair today. Get off my back.
Oh, that's okay. Owen didn't get enough beauty sleep either.
I'm
There's
cranky.
Not enough beauty sleep in the world for Owen. Owen could be in a coma, and that still would be enough.